when I put those on, it was revolutionary. It transformed everything.
If it was left up to Joe Cyclist, we'd get nowhere.
Our whole modern way of life would be screwed.
Design a mountain bike, Ernest.
And you shoved it up your fork steerer.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, welcome to this week's Single Track World podcast. I'm Hannah Dobson and I'm joined by Mark and Benji. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
We're going to start off by Mark's going to try and trigger Benji and upset him. Just to warm him up this morning. So go, Mark.
Well, obviously, because we get to see the next magazine before everybody else, I've read parts of it. I've read all of it. That's a lie. I've read some really good bits, and one
it's
of them
all good.
It is all good, yeah. Benji's written a column in this next issue, which I found particularly entertaining. And I don't know,
what's it called?
When you read it,
has it got a name?
When you read it, I can kind of read between the lines and detect your levels of kind of rage. And I just wanted to see if I could trigger it and ask you, what is the problem you've got with mountain biking in the 1990s? Because you seem to hate it. You seem to hate everything about it.
Nothing wrong with mountain biking, ever, at any point. Mountain bikes just took a long time, didn't they?
You basically said they were rubbish.
They weren't they?
About mountain bikes in the 1990s?
I think I was looking at them the other day because I was trying to work out the numbers of what's changed. I think the general thing was it was massive. The wheelbase was ridiculous, I think, was the main thing that leapt out at me. It was like, wow, we're on the same wheelbases as like World Tour road bikes. I don't know. They seem to be designed for being able to, the lack of anyone who moved it, who realised what they were doing. They're too short. Everything was really small. Like, the obsession make everything really short as possible.
Which I understand from an aerodynamic road racing in a bunch point. That's fine. I understand why we have air moving around us very quickly and then not disturbed, but we aren't doing that.
Some of us aren't. Yeah.
Well, we're not doing it on mountain bikes, are we? That's what I mean.
Well, are you looking back with 2023 eyes, though? Because at the time, wasn't it amazing?
It was amazing.
You're right. Suspension, for example, was rubbish in the 1990s, but because most of us were mountain biking in the 1990s, I mean, when I started, I was literally on I was on a fully rigid bike. So the first forks that I got were Marzocchi Zokes with a magnificent amount of travel. I think it was 50 millimeters of travel. And when I put those on, it was revolutionary. It transformed everything. And of course, they're rubbish now, but back then, they were amazing.
That took a long time to come, though, didn't it? Like, people holding on to non-suspend people, just people who
My bike is...
If it was left up to cyclists, we'd be on the same bikes from 1960, whenever Mr. Bianchi Man was riding around. We'd just be on them, wouldn't we? If it was left up to Joe Cyclist, we'd get nowhere.
Is that down to Joe Cyclist, or is that down to, like, UCI regulations, that road bikes are basically the same as they have been for forever, and they've been tightly regulated, and you can only have your saddle at these many millimetres angles and whatever.
Like, who cares what goes on the road? What I resent is the fact that they've held sway over what's happened to mountain bikes since they came out. So what do you mean, because it's the same product manager and the same people, obviously. Design a mountain bike, Ernest. They're like, oh, what the frig I'm doing? None of it required any technology, did it? To make the geometry we have now, it's required nothing has been invented, is it? There's no... Whatever you want to talk about, these bikes could have been these numbers since 1990 or whatever we've worked out.
I feel like we need to send you on a frame building thing where you build a frame that is just like using all the technology that was available in the 90s, but it takes the like forks and stuff of the 90s, but just does the geometry of a modern bike. And then ride it somewhere and tell us if it's good or not.
What we're doing then? Putting a new frame on old bits? Is that it?
Yeah, a new frame. So you would have to design the geometry according to what you think the correct geometry is. Because anybody could have welded any frame in any angles, couldn't they? If they'd had the imagination to do it. But then you'd have put your Mark's Maserati forks on it or whatever, because that's what was available. Like, that genuinely has been technologically...
Just all the... Just all the things taken as science by my peers or before, like short chain stays being good. For what?
Wheelies.
Exactly, yeah. Get a BMX. We're not wheeling around, are we? When are we wheeling around on a mountain bike ride? We're not.
For going round really tight corners.
Can we mention other publications? But just like Mountain Bike Action I'd hold them entirely responsible. And everyone was talking about short wheelbase and keeps it tucked in. And what are you doing? You're making us ride a roller skate around places. Yeah. And the other one, I think there's the next one about, I think there's another column coming about the weight weenieism or weight savings, isn't there, or something?
Yeah, that one's due with me today. So.
Right, good.
We're on to the next one already.
Good.
The first mountain bike, proper mountain bike that I bought was actually, now this is interesting, it was Trek. It was a Trek 930. The model was called the single track. It was the Trek 930 single track. And it was fully rigid and it had grip shift. I think it cost about 500 quid and had a head angle of, I think, about 71 degrees.
I don't know what my geometry was on my original diamond bike, but it would have been whatever. But the first one I bought and looked into was Park Pre, remember them? And the angles on that were 72, 72.
Parallelogram.
Terrible at both ends.
So basically what you're saying is there's no excuse in the 90s. The technology, yes, didn't exist for all the fancy suspension stuff, but you're saying actually it was nothing to do with technology designing proper angles on a mountain bike.
Pipes could have been the numbers they are now since 1944, couldn't they? It's only welding.
Did we trigger him, Hannah?
I think we did, yeah.
Anyway, you should go and read Ben's column in the latest issue.
It's called What New Standards Have Been Worth It.
Yes.
And that will be out.
There are some.
Start and come in next week, basically, yeah.
Well, that's quite a good double rage, isn't it? Because it's rage against putting up with stuff until it changed, and then being forced to adopt new things that were frustratingly close to standards we already had that we should have used instead.
Shall we segue from manufacturing of the past to manufacturing of the present and Taiwan, which is my talking point? We'll move on to something easier in a moment.
Taiwan. Yeah, you've been working on this for quite a while, haven't you, Anna?
Yeah, well, it was a whole can of worms.
So what's your problem with Taiwan?
Nothing. I don't have a problem with Taiwan at all. It sounds amazing. It's an island nation that is business-focused and prosperous with good workers' rights and, like, quite libertarian laws and that kind of thing.
What's this got to do with us?
So, basically, loads of stuff in the bike world is made in Taiwan. Taiwan is this major like ecosystem where everything you need to build a bike is there. And it's like a one-stop shop, like going to the travel agents. It's just there. And if you want to design a bike, all the skills, all the experience from the actual, like drawing it on paper to the welding it together, is all there. And so the world has become massively dependent on Taiwan for the bike stuff, for bike stuff. But that's like a little tiny bit of what Taiwan does. Because Taiwan also makes almost all the semiconductors in the world. So everything that's a microchip, there's a huge amount of dependency on Taiwan for that. And China thinks that Taiwan should be part of it, or indeed that it is part of it, but it's like a breakaway republic. And so there's been like rumblings for 70 odd years about China.
So what's happening now? I mean, why is this, it's been rumbling for 70 years. Why is this an issue now?
It's just got more intense. Like just today, the Philippines and the USA have announced that they're going to have more US military bases there because of their concerns about China's moves against Taiwan. It just seems like the way that the world is sitting and the various kind of anxieties about retaining power or whatever, just it's a little bit like Russia and Ukraine. It's that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like big stuff.
But this isn't just in your head, because you've been asking lots of people in the industry about this and you've had some very interesting answers.
Yeah. And so...
is the industry really worried about this?
Meh. They sort of are, but it's sort of too big to do anything about. And the semiconductor issue is way, way bigger and more important. Like, our whole modern way of life would be screwed if everything kicked off in Taiwan. Like, everything that involves a microchip would be delayed. And that's a much bigger problem than bikes. But if you kind of think about it, like, that's too big to comprehend. Whereas the idea that, oh, actually, I might not be able to get a fork to fix my bike, that's a little bit more, like, tangible, I think.
So you're basically writing a really cheerful article about the end of the world.
Trying not to. It feeds into all sorts of other, like, I guess, philosophical stuff that is going on in the world, like local production, like, people buy local ale, don't they? Or local bread, artisan stuff. But they don't necessarily buy local bike parts. And then when you look at how hard it would be to make local bike parts, even though, like in the UK, we used to make millions of bikes, now we don't, and we've lost a lot of the skills and the capacity to do it. So I've spoken to some people like have tried to move production to different places and looked into it, and it's pretty hard. It'll take like a full-on concerted government effort to invest in those skills and that kind of thing.
Right, so we should all be worried about this, is your conclusion?
Or we should least pay attention, and we should ask ourselves about the merits of centralization, and there are economies of scale and there's benefits of having concentrated skills and that kind of thing. But so downfall.
When's this article out?
It's out on Saturday.
Oh, so
World War III breaks out, you know.
All right, so that's last Saturday for people listening to this. So
no,
it's out already.
It will be out on the same day as this podcast, providing you manage to get yourself all edited.
Yes, indeed. Right, go check the website today, folks, because Hannah's big... what are we going to call this? Is it an essay? It's fascinating. There's a load of quotes from a lot of people across the industry and their opinions on what's happening. So you say China could hold the entire planet to hostage by basically blockading Taiwan.
Yes.
That's what we're worried about, Ben.
Yeah, fine. I'm just of the ironically Marxist opinion that money rules, and there's too many people making money in China to mess it up, so I don't think they will. So it's like anywhere, isn't it? It's like anyone who runs a big country is incredibly rich. Follow the money. What's that, The Wire? Remember watching The Wire?
Yeah.
You follow the money, you find what the reason is.
I have a similar rationale about money making things not quite as well. Shouldn't worry too much when it comes to convincing people that chairlifts at ski resorts are safe, because the thing is that they are safe because the resort couldn't afford for them not to be safe. If you know, so it's money that keeps them going. It's not all safety and everything. It's the fact that if confidence fell because there was problems with chairlifts and gondolas and all these things. Same with aeroplanes. Aeroplanes are safe because the airlines couldn't afford for them not to be safe. It's a scary thing when you think about it, that it's actually nothing to do with being safe for humans. It's just to do with making sure that the money keeps flowing.
Well, but if you want to take that stance, though, China has massive financial interests in major infrastructure throughout the world. And so, UK Power provision has massive amounts of Chinese money in it. They have massive amounts of money in ports around the world. So, like where Russia invaded Ukraine and everyone did all these massive sanctions, that's the word I'm looking for, and we kind of haven't noticed the difference that much apart from gas, because they're not making a load of stuff. Like, yeah, it'd be very hard to treat China in the same way.
Wow, there's geopolitics for you this week, folks. Shall we so get guess, back to talking yeah, about
if there's
bicycles
a point to it all, if there's a point to it all, it's that the geopolitics stuff does matter. And so I was trying to use the bike industry and the effects that of it as like a micro climate or whatever as an example of how it does matter and you should pay attention to it all.
Yeah, I guess there's some of our, we do get this criticism, and it's fair. I think sometimes they say to us, I come here just to talk about bikes, not about all this other stuff and the rest of it. I guess the point is, it's all politics. And there's no escaping these
Everything's
things.
Everything's connected.
Everything's
man.
Connected. And the geopolitics of the world does affect mountain biking and does affect all of us one way or another. And we can't really
I suppose it's it. If you might want to come to us because you don't want to read about it. That's the thing I would counter with that. I'd like to be a safe haven away from the freaking headlines. I've had enough of them. What's the point knowing about it? What am I going to do? I'm
well,
just like a little bit...
Buy stock now.
To the brim of hand-wringing worriness without any power to do anything about it. I don't think it helps anyone.
Kind of, we do have power, I think. I don't think it's we don't have power when everyone ignores it. That's when we have the least power. So,
it's a catch 22. Mountain bike site. People haven't come
it's
to
a catch 22.
Mountain bike site. I know what you mean, but there is. I do understand why people's. Roll their eyes and they see content that isn't about what they've come to see, and I'm fairly sympathetic to it, really.
But then if you place value on still being able to mountain bike, then maybe you would make choices like buying from UK frame builders or going to the bespoke hand-built bike fair, where those are like investing in keeping those skills going rather than them all being totally centralised.
Yeah, I mean, moving away from being in the centre of both those two positions of you there, I'm going to try and say that I think it's just really useful for us all to know where everything comes from. And if that's all that happens is that people are aware of where stuff comes from, then I think that's a really good thing. That we don't question the fact that it's really important to know where food comes from. And the politics around, you know, certain foods and that sort of thing, you know, we think that's a very healthy position to be in, to be able to make good choices. So maybe all of this geopolitics and things in mountain biking just allows people to make good choices. Mm. And we try and balance it, don't we? We do stupid things and we try and keep it entertaining. We do the magazine's full of nice aspirational places to just go and ride your bike. So, yeah.
And big reviews.
Big reviews.
Big important reviews. And that's our next segue, because we reviewed a mudguard this week.
Yeah.
And Benji wants to talk about mudguards.
Tell us about mudguards, Ben.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more.
That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Choose single track. Choose print. Choose digital. Choose an independent mountain bike magazine. Choose mountain bike culture. Choose adventure and mishap. Choose great stories and glorious photography. Choose ad-free access to our website. Choose time out with a mug of tea. Choose an annual subscription. Choose a monthly subscription. Choose discounts in our shop on a range of ethical products. Choose bobble hats. Choose hip flasks. Choose gift subscriptions for your friends. Choose single track salvation for your arse. Choose a username. Choose a community. Choose to support independent publishing. Choose your future and our future. Choose single track.
Well, it was me and Hannah who are not particularly traditionally rear mudguards, isn't it? I don't think anyone would. I think the front mudguard acceptance is fine, isn't it? Particularly since they go on your fork now and they actually work and they don't whatever. But the rear mudguard,
it's eyes, isn't it? The front mudguard is about making sure you don't get crap sprayed up in your eyes.
I mean, yeah,
you can't really argue with that level of functionality.
Yeah,
seeing is pretty important.
But then the rear one is just a funny. Well, I mean, we're all grown ups, but it just shows like grown ups aren't grown ups, are we? It's like, why haven't we all got rear mudguards on? Because having to use one for a bit because it was part of the job to see, review it and things. Why I wouldn't put one on my own normal bike, but I probably would and have put one on. I don't have an e-bike of my own, but there's always one here. Why is it acceptable to put one on an e-bike but not on a normal bike? So that makes no sense at all.
Is that a
That's
case?
The general
that
vibe I get
seen?
From people. Yeah.
Yeah, so people...
I think people...
We're happy to ride rear mudguards on e-bikes but not non-e-bikes.
Is that
a trend
so.
You've noticed?
Yeah. Well, I don't really see rear mudguards on a percentage of normal bikes as many as you see on e-bikes. I think there's a lot of e-bike riders, their strength is they don't give a flying F what anyone thinks they look like because they're on an e-bike already. You know what I mean? They've got over that. I'm not bothered what you think about me. I've left that behind. So
there
I'm on an
e-bike
and I've got a rear mudguard thing. I think a lot of it is because they never used to work. But they never used to work, did they? I mean, you used to attach them to seat posts. So since droppers came along, I guess that's got rid of that
crud
way
buster.
Of putting it on. And they also, yeah, and they never had a crud guard. They never used to work, did they? Crud buster things, yeah. I think it was crud catcher on the front, underneath the down tube, and the crud guard was on the back. Now they did one originally that went in, had little metal things coming down to your pannier rack bolts, from memory. So that was very tied to a certain type of back end. But it worked because it was very close to the tire, wasn't it? And once we went to the ones that like were Mark II and it went on your seat post and was free in the air, it was too far away from the rear tire to be as good as it could be. And you always used to hit it with your foot getting on and off, I seem to recall. And it was also impede hanging off the back of it.
Just want to say now, I've got a really good crud anecdote that I want to actually tell you about, but carry on, we'll get to that. I've ruined your flow now, Ben.
No, but yeah, I think we will see them creeping on to normal bikes more and more, just like we have done with them coming front mud guards of fairly standard. I mean, they start with like little marsh guards, didn't they, and RRP things, bendy things. And that was like a gateway. And now, not say everyone, but we're all got big old moto fork crown, zip tie or bolt on, whatever, mudguards on. In the UK anyway, definitely. Because they've realised, oh yeah.
So Ben, you're a convert to real mud gods now.
I think a lot of it as well on the Mudguard front. I think we mentioned this before when we talked about it, just Hannah and me in the office the other day. It was like, I think because when you are in winter, you've had enough on a normal bike quite quick. So you don't get to that third hour where you've got a bit hypothermic so much anymore. Whereas on an e-bike, you're like, oh, I'm still keep on going. I'll keep going for 3 or 4 hours or whatever it is. So by that point, if you'd not had a rear mudguard on, even if you've physically got enough energy left, you've just got very uncomfortable at the back. So there's a bit of that. It's about where and how long you ride on an e-bike is probably a big thing about it. But I think most of it is just people worried about
story now.
How they look, I think. Well, we don't know, and I don't know. I've not really looked at rear mudguards until Mudhugger sent them. So I don't know whether Mudhugger gets them fairly overrepresented in these sort of things, but whether there's anyone else doing them, they mount like that, which seems
ones
to be
that don't flap about and rattle.
Well, they attach to the swing arm. Mm. They attach to the swing arm, which is I'm not really aware of any others that attach in the way that one does.
Right, I'm going to tell you my crud story now.
Okay. Hmm.
Okay, this is a historical story. This is just predates single tracks. This is probably about 1999. I was freelancing for MB UK, and I was sent up to interview Mr. Tompkins, Mr. Crud, at the time, and he lived near Scarborough. So I went up there to do an interview for MB UK. And it was great place where he lived. He got, you know, this like farmhouse just outside Scarborough, and it was all very pretty. We went for a ride, went back to his house, and he showed me around the grounds of his house, and he's got like this stable block. Yes, you can make money out of plastic mudguards, it seems. But he showed me the stable block, and he didn't have horses, but in one stable block, he opened the door, and there was a mountain of plastic parts. We might have some listeners who are old enough. I bet Benji remembers these. Once upon a time, MB UK had a cover mount gift, and it was called the Crud Bung. And was a little round disc with some little plastic bits on, and you shoved it up your fork steerer. And it basically sealed off the bottom of your fork steerer from mud. Mm. Because if you look up inside your fork steerer, you can see there's internal gubbins that goes up. And that used to get caked in crap and mud and stuff. And so the Crud Bung was designed to basically just block that hole. And MB UK did a deal with Crud to put cover mount in these. And these were back in the day when you could literally, when MB UK was selling like 65,000 copies a month. So their print run would probably be over 100,000. So in order to do this, Crud had to produce an enormous quantity of these little tiny plastic bungs. And because of the way that scale works in making these plastic things, they had to make like almost like 500,000 of these things. And they cover mounted these on, and he was left with basically hundreds of thousands of these things. And when he opened the stable door, they were all there. They weren't bagged in boxes or anything like that. They were literally just dumped in as if it was a coal cellar. And they were red, and this pile of this stuff went up the walls. And he said, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with them. And for some reason I said, can I have some? And he said, yes. And he got a sack. And he filled a sack of these things. And I left with a sack of plastic Crud Bungs. I must have had maybe a few thousand in that sack. I had no idea what I was going to do with them. And then Single Track came along. And we decided, I remember we took this sack to the first bike show where we launched Single Track, which was in April 2001. It was at the NEC in Birmingham. And we proudly turned up with all of our magazines that we had priced at £2.95. And we hadn't brought any 5p's. And it was cash only back in those days. There was no plastic. So we were trying to sell a magazine and people were handing over 3 quid and 5s. And we had no change. We had no way to do. So what we did was we gave a crud bung as a 5p change. So we said, we haven't got any 5p, but here, have a crud bung. So everybody who bought a single track magazine back then got a crud bung in their change. And I think we had a stock of crud bungs that went on for maybe several years. And at various points in the early years of single track, we were doing all sorts of weird offers with these crud bungs. Giving them away and using them as basically currency. I wonder if there's anybody out there. Let us know if you still have your original crud bum that you got from us back in the early noughties. That'd be a fun thing. There we go. That's my anecdote. Crud bums.
Crud bums to be found inside Wales around the world.
Yes. Yeah. What are they? They weren't co-branded with MB UK then.
No, they weren't. No, actually, they weren't. I don't. Back then, we wouldn't have cared anyway. You know, no. We just had a few thousand free crud bungs, and yeah, I think there was one point we actually had a round tub of these, and we went to an event, and we put prizes inside the thing, and then filled it with crud bungs. So it was like a what are those things where you
a tombola,
like a tombola, and you dug your hand into
the tub.
Bran tub, that was it. You dug your hand into the bran tub of crud bungs and you pulled out a prize. So we did that for a time as well. Yes. I'm not sure what else we used them for, but we made the most of them. And eventually they all went. There was a time where there was only, I remember there was this is the last crud bung. I think it was probably about 2005 when we had the last crud bung. I don't know.
It's a shame we haven't got any left because Charlie could have put them into the Valentine's bundle. I think that would have gone quite nicely. The crud bung with the bum butter. And the bobble hat, yeah.
What are you inferring there, Hannah?
I just think it would have made a good headline somewhere.
A good bung.
I wonder where they all went. They'll be on a cycle route, won't they? They'll be like, or a tennis court somewhere, won't they? All
yeah. His, I wonder if he's still Tompkins got that bungs. Stable full of thousands of crud bums.
I remember them.
Is that it for today? Have we got more?
I think that's about it. We do have a bundle offer on. This is Charlie's version of a Valentine's gift. So
when's
you get
that?
A single
2 weeks,
track.
A couple of weeks off, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks away. So, and with the post and all of that, you know, go for it. But yeah, so you get a single track bobble hat, some bum butter, you get a big tub and a little tub in a bundle. And there's about 10 quid saving on it at the minute. So
there we go.
It's the Spread the Love Valentine's bundle.
Okay.
Show your partner that you're serious about the relationship.
With a tub of bun butter. A knob of bun butter, in
a
fact.
A knob of bun butter.
Okay.
Bun butter's quite good for if you've got ropey, whatever you call these bits on your fingers. I don't know. It's like salve, isn't it, really? Is that what that's what I mainly use it for. Yeah, it's good.
You can use it for lots of things, yeah.
It's quite French cheap, actually, if you treat it as an alternative to whatever it's called. Chapstick. Still exists.
But don't double dip, as Charlie always says.
Yeah. No, exactly. So that's, I guess you end up with a big tub and a small knob. Then you've got two. There you go. No double dipping problems.
Come for single track, for the bikes, and stay for the innuendo. That should be
indeed.
A new one. Shall we leave it there?
Yes. Okay. Thanks, everyone. And thanks for listening. And tune in again next week for more of this sort of thing. Down
bye.
With this sort of thing. Bye.
Careful now.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.